Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 172. I'm Steve Borsch, and I am on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Hey, that gets me going after a late night. Thank you.
And Phil Wilson.
Howdy do.
I thought you were going to say howdy doody. I'm glad you didn't.
Sense.
Yeah. Oh, so why'd you have a late night, Graham? What were you doing?
We were down in Rochester fighting through that rain. Oh, my God. Was that an unbelievable amount of rain that hit southern Minnesota yesterday? Did you see the rainfall totals? Yeah, it hit worse going south. Luckily, we escaped it in Rochester most of the day, but not at the end. I got absolutely soaked last about an hour and 15 minutes of being soaked to the bone and then driving home in wet clothes for an hour and a half. So fun.
Wow.
So,
well, you know what's interesting?
Graham is suffering from a little chafing today.
Chafing, yes, yes.
I'll tell you, it was an experience, but it was fun.
Rochester. I'll tell you, when we run out of water down in the desert southwest, they're all coming here, you know.
Oh, yeah.
All the refugees.
Yep.
All the Arizona refugees will be here.
Yep. We got the water, baby.
All right. So
the land of 5,000 lakes.
Yeah.
So
I have to ask you guys,
who got last night? Yeah.
who got hacked? Did you guys look and see if your password got hacked for LinkedIn?
I just changed it.
Just changed the darn password.
So did I. Yeah.
I did it immediately as soon as I heard.
Another crisis narrowly averted.
Yep.
So does anybody care?
I don't know. It's kind of funny.
So they hack into my LinkedIn account. They have access to pretty much everything they can see on my LinkedIn account.
Yep.
But you don't. None of you guys have pro accounts, right?
No.
So they don't have any credit card info. Okay.
I wonder what percentage of LinkedIn users have actual pro accounts.
You know, it's got to be a pretty high percentage because those guys make a lot of money. I mean, it's the only internet company that's gone IPO that continues to do really well. So I think all those recruiters and what percentage of people on LinkedIn are recruiters, they're obviously paying. And it's not cheap. I mean, I don't think it's cheap. Do you? What is it per month?
It could be like $1,000 a year, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, you've got to be a pretty serious business, you know, recruiting business to want to fork out dough like that. Either that or you need a job really, really bad, you know?
Well, or you want to be able to reach out to people on your own without pinging your network to say, hey, introduce me to, you know, Joe Schmedlap.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can just reach Joe yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, you got like business is monthly is $24.95 or annually you can get it for $19.95. There's a business plus, which of course is recommended for $39.95 a month.
Yeah, too much.
If you pay annually and then there's the executive at $74.95 a month annually.
So. Good God.
Do they bring your coffee on the executive one?
You know, I'm not really sure.
They print your email for you.
Your filter and your
And then they give you a self-addressed stamped envelope. And you write the replies on it and you send it back. And then they email the people back.
That's right. That's right.
Sounds
exactly.
Like a winner. Wow.
Yeah.
Actually, they fax it to you.
So. Oh, here's the big deal. You get contact anyone directly within mail with a response guaranteed. At your Business Plus count, you get 10 of those a month.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's $100 value right there. That's what it says.
Well, it can be. The only thing is I've had people connect with me. Like I had a guy connect with me that's with a local copier sales organization here in town.
Yeah, you probably don't get a lot of chicks. You probably don't get a lot of chicks hitting on you on LinkedIn, do you?
That doesn't happen much.
Not much.
Like never. Anyway.
Well, what's funny is it's been around for so long, I don't even think of it as a social networking service. You know, because I joined it in like, what, 2002, I think, or 2003.
No, yeah.
No, it wasn't launched till 2003.
Some crazy, but I was like really early. So. Yeah,
but here's the thing. If you've participated in any of the groups, some of them are pretty valuable, except though that it's always seems like it's people who are wannabes rather than the people that are experts in their specific field.
Yep.
So that's the only downside.
Yep. Yeah, well,
Still a great network, though.
Passwords. We can use it, but we ain't spending money on it.
Okay, so what's the deal on Monday's event with Microsoft? Have you guys heard about this?
Yeah, I thought it might be related to Yammer, but obviously that's history now, so it's got to be something else. Seems like I read some conjecture, and I can't remember what it is. Did you guys hear any rumors? Or?
Well, I think you're always rumors of the tablet.
The tablet.
You know, Microsoft's got a lot of stuff going on right now with the Windows 8 rollout pending and their acquisition of Yammer, their Windows Phone growth, which is not by any means iPhone growth, but it is a positive uptick for them. So it could be a lot of different things.
Well, why is it in Los Angeles, though? That's kind of weird.
Yeah, it is. How about, are they buying Yahoo or are they buying Nokia? They're both cheap.
Maybe they're buying Comcast. Maybe they're, if it's in LA, it may be something, entertainment related.
Entertainment related.
Yeah. It could be Google or Microsoft TV. You never know.
There is rumor that they're going to expand all the set-top box sort of options on the Xbox. So that may be that they do that, plus they have some sort of tablet, maybe with a partner. I can't imagine they would have an Xbox tablet, but they might.
That'd be kind of fun.
I guess you could see that. And it'll be interesting, though.
Got to be entertainment related if it's in LA. I mean, Yahoo has an office there in Santa Monica, a big one, but I doubt that would be why they would do it in LA. It's got to be.
Why would they buy Nokia anyway?
Because they're cheap. Did you see what they're
for? They're buying Nokia.
Did you see what their market cap is now? It's like $8 billion. And the day the iPhone came out in 2007. Their market cap was like $106 billion.
Oh, wow.
That's how far they have fallen.
Scary.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And then we see the news of the two ex-co-CEOs getting the huge payout they got. Did you read that? Talk about sick. About $12 million each or something.
Sad.
The guys that just exited recently, the co-CEOs.
But of RIM?
No. Was that RIM or was that Nokia?
I don't know.
I thought it said Nokia, but I don't know. I can't keep up with who's on first at either of those companies.
Nokia didn't have co-CEOs, but RIM did.
Oh, well, then it must be those guys. Yeah, if they're co-CEOs. Yeah, they got some big payout then.
I don't know.
It just hit the news this morning. I didn't really read it. I just saw it scroll by.
But so well, I guess we'll find out on Monday, though, right?
Yeah, it seems like too little, too late. I would think it would be more Xbox related than tablet related, but we'll see.
I'm going to concur with you. I think, Tim, it's going to be Xbox centric.
But it's kind of odd that they didn't announce whatever it is at E3, which was like last week, I think, or the week before.
Yeah. So.
Also in Los Angeles. So that's odd.
I'm gonna bet it's. More tablet related.
Okay. No, so, I bet that they announced that they've acquired Yammer.
That'll be a surprise.
And what's with that? What are they going to do with Yammer?
Well, you think about it, though. Yammer is a very popular thing. It works very well in their office suite. I think it's just sort of an extension of their business. Windows and Microsoft really, I think they know that their future lies in continuing in the enterprise. And I think that Yammer is a piece of that.
Well, I got to tell you that if you ever used Yammer, which I did, I started using it in our company and I just couldn't get anybody else to really love it and adopt it. But it's like Twitter and Groupware combined. I mean, it's really a great little technology.
It really is. Yeah. Yep. And, I work with a couple of clients that if I could get their employees, to spend as much time on, public facing social media as they do on Yammer, it would be a boon to their social media profile. It's like, guys, get off Yammer. Does this really have to be private?
the rub that I read on Yammer, and by the way, I would wonder now if this isn't more of a death knell for SharePoint I mean, where does SharePoint fit into this whole thing? But the rub that I read on Yammer is they really don't have all that high a percentage of paid accounts.
Probably.
There's a ton of free accounts, and there's a ton of those users that don't really use it daily. So, you know,
turns out they didn't need to have any paid subscribers. They got bought out.
It sounds like they did pretty well at $1.2 billion for a company that only launched. It doesn't seem like more than 3 years ago. Maybe it was four. It was at one of the first Tech Disrupt events.
Yeah, they won. Yammer won, didn't they?
Yes, they did. It might have been the very first one, or it was the second one. I can't remember.
Yeah, 4 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty amazing march.
Well, you know, here's the thing that I'll say about Yammer is it makes total and complete sense to me that Microsoft would buy them, because when you think about SharePoint, you think about having a site where you might have some kind of threaded discussion capability. Nobody's going to use it on their phones. They're not going to use it on their tablets. But a Yammer, which is more Twitter-like, you know, if I'm running a group, like when I was running alliances at Lawson, I would have easily used Yammer for my team so that we could stay in touch and communicate. And so as long as you're already on the network, you just create a group, boom, you're in. Everybody can communicate regardless of the kind of device they're on. I just think it's really a smart move.
Well, and speaking of Lawson, they are big users of Yammer, and they use Chatter too, as I understand it, because Kay Roseland is over there now. And it's fascinating to me that some of these big companies like Lawson and like Honeywell here locally, you know, Rich Haig, I'm not sure how he
at
wants
Honeywell.
To pronounce. They use both too, both Chatter and Yammer. I mean, Salesforce's product, Chatter. Mm-hmm. And apparently they somehow integrate, which I find fascinating.
What's the next service going to be? Blather?
Blather. There you go.
Yeah.
Blather.
Quick.
No, it's going to be called Staller. So when you're sitting in the stall, you can communicate all your pals.
Labby.
Can I just tell you a really funny story?
We'll call it Dribble. Dribble.
I have to impart a really funny story. So I'm in an airport restroom. This goes back four years ago.
Nice.
And there's a guy.
Oh, come on. There's going to be a politician joke here somewhere.
No. There's a guy who's in one of the stalls. There's four stalls. And his phone rings, and all of a sudden you hear him say, hey, could you guys not just be quiet for 1 second? I have to answer this. And all of a sudden he says, hello. And simultaneously, all the toilets and urinals flush. Everybody flushes on the guy, you know. Oh my God. I just thought that was so hysterical. Anyway,
I hope it wasn't his most important client.
Well, it probably was.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Quiet! I gotta get this.
I gotta get this.
Say anything to anybody in the stalls.
Well, that's just it. Yeah, exactly.
You guys want to keep it down?
You let it ring.
Yeah. Oh my God!
I thought you said he dropped it in the toilet.
Well, no. And anyway, you know, the new iOS 6 features. We got to talk about WWDC and bring on our guest. But one of the features is if you can't take the call, you can press a button and send a text message, or you can send it, or, you know, send an email that says, hey, I'll call you later. That'll be great, because at least people then know they don't have to leave you a voicemail. Because I hate getting voicemails now.
Yeah, that's an awesome feature. I agree, Steve. When I saw that, I thought, oh man, is that needed?
Oh, yeah. No kidding. I can't tell you how many calls I've had to just stop. And rolled a voicemail.
Just one more feature nobody's going to be able to figure out how to turn on.
Nah, it'll be easy. This week was the Worldwide Developers Conference from Apple.
WWDC.
And everybody, of course, thought that they were going to release Warp Drive and a holodeck. You know, the expectations were substantially higher than they should have been, but
expectations are always high.
Always. Apple. But the keynote was really fascinating, and there was new stuff announced. But we have a guest on, you know, that Graham invited on, Bill Hyman, who's founder of CodeMorphic here in town. And he's been out there all week and is waiting in his hotel room for us to connect with him on Skype. Should we bring him on?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. We'll add them on. This will be good because it'd be interesting to hear what the sessions were like.
Yes, not just
what he can say. Yeah. He's under NDA, so he probably can't say a lot.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Well, I just caught the end of that.
Hi, Bill.
Yeah. In general, all the concert, all the conference attendees are under NDA in terms of the technical specifics. Anything that's covered during the sessions that wasn't publicly announced.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, I can talk in general terms about things. I just can't tell you the technical specifics.
So you can't talk about all the new Apple TV stuff that they disclosed?
Oh, yeah. Well, but in general terms, I can say that nothing was disclosed.
there you go. Hey, Bill, this is Graham. How you doing, buddy?
Doing fine.
Good.
Yeah.
Now, tell us what number WWDC is this for you?
For me, this is actually my fourth. It should be my fifth. I can't believe that I've actually been doing iPhone development for that long. But public SDK actually has been out for, about 5 years now almost.
Yep. You were one of the first in town, or the first in town, I think.
In fact, I remember March of that year, must have been 2007.
Yep.
I had applied to Apple to get my to sign up for their developer program for the iPhone. And around March, when Apple announced that the iPhone was going to have third-party apps and so forth, they chose a select number. I don't know exactly what the selection process was. A select number of developers that applied to get their developer credentials and certificates so that they could actually install apps on their phones and their devices.
Yeah.
And for some reason, they picked me.
Yeah, I remember that. And you were showing an app.
I remember that.
Anybody.
Yes.
Yeah, you had the rotary dialer thing. And
that's right.
Exactly. I showed that at Minibar.
Yeah.
And to my amazement at the time, it's like, you mean no other developers in the Twin Cities had got this from Apple? Why'd they pick me? I don't know.
It's your really swarthy good looks, Bill. It's your swarthy good looks.
Yeah. It's probably a good thing I didn't send a picture of me. But I took the... I got the certificate, and I actually, up to that time, I was sort of dabbling into doing iPhone development. So I did have an iPod Touch, that I got probably whenever the iPod Touches came out. In fact, I have a little story about that. When I got the iPod Touch, Apple had just announced it about a week before it was officially to arrive in the stores. I was at the Apple store, I believe it was at Southdale. Mm-hmm. And just for fun, I'm like, I asked one of the Apple geniuses there, so when do you expect to get the iPod Touches? Now, this is a week before they were officially supposed to be sold.
Uh-huh.
And the guy looked at me, he's like, oh, we have them in the back room. Do you want one?
I'm like, oh, how funny.
He's like, yeah, sure. He sold me one a week before the public had one. It was the weirdest thing. You don't think of Apple doing anything like that, but it's almost like there again, was Apple may have been just having this policy where they were kind of seeding them to prime the market, as it were.
Sure. Yeah.
And, I had it out in public, probably that day, and someone said, ooh, is that an iPhone? Because not many people were familiar with the iPod Touch, but they saw the iPhone. But show it to them, and that looks thinner and stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was weird. So anyway, that was the funny story that's about something that Apple wouldn't necessarily expect Apple to do.
Yeah.
And then that December, January, I'm like, you know what? It'd be really cool to build third-party apps. Now, at that point, Steve Jobs had basically announced, the only way we're going to support you know, developers developing on this platform on at the time it was called the iPhone OS, is if you you need to use basically or create web applications. Yep. And we'll have a section on the Apple website where there are will actually allow you to list your web applications and get them out to the users. Now, of course, as we all know, the web applications aren't very, you know, some can do cool things, but they're not as cool as native apps,
right,
ultimately.
Right.
And so I took the, you know, I'm like, you know, I really want to know what it takes to develop an app. So I did some technical investigation, and of course there were some hacker type groups that had figured out how to create their own native apps. And so I had to jailbreak my iPod Touch. I had gotten a few months before, and start learning this whole new SDK. Well, you know, for a developer perspective, to learn the iPhone and how to develop on the iPhone, you to do native apps, you have to learn basically a new language, you know, Objective-C, which is, you know, it's related to the C class of languages, C, C++, but it's not, it's different. I mean, it basically combines Smalltalk-like features, which is another computer language, with C. And it's actually a relatively old language. It goes back, you know, to the next and next step days. And then there's the what's known as the frameworks that surround you know, that provide the APIs that you can use within your application to put up the windows and display the text and interact with the user and so forth. And of course, you know, because it was all private, there was no real documentation on how to do this stuff, even among the hacker community. So you'd kind of learn by example. And so we, I started learning how to develop iPhone applications by example and just playing around with that. And so that was about 3 months before Apple announced that regular developers would be able to, a developer would be able to develop iPhone applications.
And, what sort of tools did the jailbreak community come up with at that time to develop apps?
What they did is they built what's known as tool chains, which are combinations of tool. In particular, the tool that was used was the GNU C compiler, and which would compile Objective-C, which actually is the same tool that Apple shipped at that time when they opened up development to the rest of the developer community. And they built it so that it would just output the correct binary formats for the executables, for the apps to run on the iPhone OS. And it was a rather manual process. It wasn't for the faint of heart, you know, learning how to do this. And so anyway, I started fooling around and I'm like, you know what would be kind of funny? I'll develop a rotary dial application for this. It was one of my first iPhone applications. And so I developed it, and it was actually on the, you know, private SDK for the iPhone. And it's like, oh, this is actually kind of cool. So when Apple really released it to the public, I had to make the changes, port the application to the newer style that Apple had. And, you know, for me, it was just kind of a funny app. I didn't really care about it. In fact, another app I had created at the time was a lighter type app, you know, with a virtual lighter with a flame flickering.
No fart apps, though, right?
What's that? No.
No fart apps? Okay.
No, the whole category of application did not cross my mind. I didn't know how that category was going to just explode.
Yeah.
And, but, so I had these apps, but, you know, what I was always interested in was not, you know, those are just junky throwaway apps, you know, whatever. And I wanted to learn, you know, how to do, you know, real apps, you know, that weren't prankish and funny. And so I, at the time, I was basically a Windows.net consultant, and I had been consulting. Well, right now, I've been consulting independently since about 1996. But the last 4 or 5 years, I've been doing iPhone and mobile, you know, like Android exclusively. But like, it'd be cool just to transition my consulting career over to this new technology. It's fun to write. It's fun to do, and I enjoy it. Okay, and so anyway, the I had talked to basically I think I was on the list at Minibar. Julio saw me. He called
good
me.
Old Julio.
Yeah. So
he's not that old, actually.
No, yeah. Good young Julio.
And so, you know, I was talking to him about, you know, the iPhone a little bit, and then I told him about, you know, these apps I put, like the Rotary Dial and so forth, and he's like, oh, can you come to St. Paul, you know, have your picture taken? I'm like, yeah, sure. And so I end up, you know, Dave and Allison, who's my partner, and I end up going to the Pioneer Press. We got our picture taken with our Rotary Dial application.
I remember that. Yeah,
sure, I do too.
But, you know, one of the funny things was I didn't really want to get into, you know, I was very resistant to get into these small entertainment type apps. And, you know, I kind of kicked myself for not having done it. But because that initially the App Store was filled with that, I probably would have had some of the first apps of that ilk in the App Store. But, oh, well. Water under the bridge, but
yeah.
So now it's 4 years later, and kind of one of the things that didn't come out of WWDC that both Steve and I would like are some development tools that are easier to use than the current tools. Do you see that happening in the future, where they'll make like an iWeb for apps?
I have to say I see some trends in that direction, but not necessarily from Apple. I mean, Apple, within the iPhone development, they've actually made developing apps using Apple's development tools easier for people who may not have a lot of like low level coding experience. And you know, and they announced that last year and made it public. It's something called Storyboards. And I do know, you know, I think the son of my wife's first cousin, who lives in Las Vegas, who is 13 years old, created, you know, an app. It's called Multi-Browser. And it allows you to select tabs that, you know, either have one browser on it, two browsers, three browsers, four browsers. So you can have multiple browsers on a single page. And he didn't have a whole lot of experience with actually doing Objective-C coding. But he created this app totally using the storyboards within the Apple development tools, the Xcode environment. And so it kind of shows some of the things you can do, but you can only go so far with that technology, in terms of having a complete type of app. I see probably more and more third-party companies, you know, companies outside of Apple, actually developing tool sets that will, you know, empower developers like that. But I don't see a direct priority from Apple to do that. Although the trend is they're trying to make it easier overall to develop iPhone apps and iPad apps in general.
Hey, Bill, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about WWDC. Obviously, we all heard a lot about the keynote. the one that was so eloquently dubbed the "fuck Google" keynote. But what about the rest of the week? What's going on? What have you been doing? And tell us a little bit about how you know what the event entails.
Okay. Well, you know, the WWDC event basically it runs from Monday to Friday, 1 week every year, and you know, Apple is always very secretive about announcing when it's going to be and so forth. It's usually the last several years it's been the first week in June. This year it's the second week in June. You know, you basically have about 5,000 Apple developer geeks running all over, you know, this SoMa Union Square area of, yep, of San Francisco. And the last 3 years, Apple has always been giving out these American Apparel jackets. They're navy blue, and they have, like, on the back, well, this year it's 12. You know, last year it was 11. Previous year it was 10.
All makes sense.
WWDC on the front, and a lot of developers wear those around. And so you see them everywhere.
Well, and I was going to say, there's a ton more than the 5,000 that want to get in but can't. They have to cap it, right?
You know, one of the things is Apple basically takes over the Moscone West building, which is part of the convention center.
Yep. The new one, yep.
In fact, it's the same place where Google I.O. is going to be in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
The number of developers, 5,000, I think, is the maximum number that will, you know, reasonably.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just waiting for some of the sessions. You can't believe these long queues that form, you know, before every session so that you can get. But the rooms are enormous. You know, the main room, which is on the third floor, called the studio, during the keynote, it can probably accommodate almost 5,000 people.
That's a big room.
They actually downsize a little, you know, the rest of the week. It probably goes down to about 3,000 in terms of capacity. But then they have, like, these smaller rooms on the second floor. Smaller being a relative term, you know, probably a couple of them hold 1,500, 2,000 people in a single session.
Wow.
It's the Moscone pretty much is filled up, you know, having 5,000. Itself really would like Apple to expand the conference. Steve Jobs actually at last year's keynote, before the keynote, I don't even think it was on the public feed of it, basically said, you know, for us, he apologized to developers, you know, for people not being able to get in last year. And he said, you know, Moscone just fits all the needs for Apple, and you know, unfortunately, we have to cap the attendance. And there's, from Apple's perspective, there's no better place, and there's no place in the Bay Area, I guess, that they can do it. But
right,
so they really are resistant to move it and expand it, you know.
So what are these breakout sessions or what ones did you choose to go to? I assume you choose what you want to go to, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's probably about 6 or 7 different rooms where sessions are going on. Every session is about an hour long. Well, yeah, I mean, some end early, but they're given an hour slot, and then there's 15-minute passing time between the sessions.
So what were some of the ones that you liked the best?
It's like, you know, information about the file system. Usually information about the file system, information about, I'd say, some new features, some new user interface controls that are coming in the next version of iOS. A lot of them are focused on giving developers the information they need to develop on the next version of the iOS operating system. So basically, this will be released in the fall with some unnamed and unknown hardware. I don't know what that means.
Right. could have a five attached to it. Or not.
You know, it could be plus. I don't know. But
yeah, who knows? You know,
the interesting thing is a lot of the rumors and speculations that you hear outside of the development community are in the development community too, because Apple just does not really show their hand very often. I mean, it's Tim Cook recently said, I think that was at All Things Digital when he was talking, that they plan on double downing on secrecy. And so,
yes, right. Yeah.
So they are really, part of their whole mystique, I guess, is by being secretive. And I think it frustrates a lot of people in the development community. It frustrates a lot of users, too, that they're like that. But, you know, it's a formula that's worked for them, and they've been successful with it.
Yeah. Say, hey, Bill, let me ask you, and I'll let the other guys jump in. Let me ask you an iPhone or iOS versus Android question. There are several things that can be done with the Android operating system that you can't do with iOS. iOS has added some of those features over the last releases, like Notification Center, that kind of thing. Did you see anything, or can you disclose anything, maybe you can't, where we would see more things that are missing from iOS that Android has? Or can't you talk about that kind of stuff?
Well, you know, I think, I'm trying to come up with a specific example. You know, one of the things is, I would have to say the answer to your question is yes. But I'm trying to think up what a good example might be that I can share with you.
Yeah. And you develop in both, so you know you're well aware of what one system can do that the other can't. And I know notifications has been a big area where there isn't equality. Are there other areas besides notifications or?
Besides notifications, well, I mean, Android allows applications to do hook in itself at various levels. They can run tasks in the background.
Yes, that's what I was getting at. Yeah, okay.
And, you know, Apple over the years has slowly, you know, Apple's really conservative in what they allow, you know, each version of iOS to do. And I you know, if you look at the trend of allowing background processing, for example, I mean, really, you know, iOS apps couldn't develop anything that ran in the background, you know, like Apple's own apps can do, you know, for example, like their mail app has always run the background and let the user know that the mail there, but, you know, third-party apps were never able to do that. Then they opened it up so that you could do background audio. And so, you know, things like radio tuner type apps could play audio, or music playing apps could play audio. And then they opened up a little bit more for apps to allow to get notification of location changes internally. You know, so you that opened up the ability for like fitness style apps, you know, to track a user's location even though their phone went to sleep. Or and I think the last release they opened up this whole concept of like, it's called geofencing, where you can set basically a latitude and longitude and a radius, and then the app will wake up when the user enters to that. So slowly, Apple has been opening up some of these things. But, you know, one of the things that one of the reasons why Apple has been doing this has been kind of a rather pragmatic thing. That one, they know that if they give developers the world, the developers, particularly some developers, will take advantage of it and basically, you know, it's the tragedy of the commons. You know, some apps will just use this and really, you know, affect the user's battery life and just overall experience. Apple's really that. The whole experience about owning the iPhone and using it, and they don't want anyone to basically interfere with that. And so they're very conservative and very slow about adding these features. But the trend is definitely pointing the way that you know, they're giving apps more power. Plus, you know, through their app store and app review process, if they find an app that they don't like how it's behaving, they can yank it. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Ultimate power. Yeah. But you're confident we will see some new features that, well, have they, can you answer the question, have they announced all the features they're adding in iOS 6 in the keynote, or?
Well, you know, that's kind of interesting.
So we're getting at something here.
But it's kind of funny. There's, during the keynote, they'll like flash up these slides showing, you know, something with big words on it. And then there'll be a lot of small words behind it that talk about, you know, that basically are referencing, you know, more details about, you know, what encompasses and what has changed. You know, I'll give an example. There's a whole new category of applications that are coming out called transit apps, and they were mentioned in the keynote. You know, with the mapping.
Oh, sure. Stuff like buses and light rail and all kinds of stuff like that, you mean?
And one of the sessions was out on, obviously, on mapping and the changes to the whole mapping thing and use of the Apple Maps and so forth. But, and they talked about transit apps and the transit apps. And I know that there's been some external press about this too. And actually, some misinformation about, you know, what it does and so forth. But it's basically a new category of applications that allow, you know, third-party providers of routing data, you know, it could be like airline or a you know, bus company and so forth, to have their own app integrate into the whole mapping experience on the iPhone. You know, and that's something that was just briefly mentioned in a word that flashed up briefly, and I think Scott Forstner may have actually mentioned it, you know, he mentioned it in the transit app or in the mapping demo at the end.
Sure.
You know, it's actually pretty cool stuff. Allowing more and more third-party type integration into the iPhone OS, and you know, one of the interesting things is you're seeing Apple doing more partnerships with other companies. You know, rather than trying to just own everything and do everything themselves, you're seeing partnerships with Twitter, now with Facebook, Yelp. Yahoo News. I mean, that was a little Y symbol appeared on the Surrey demo in the keynote.
Sure. Oh, interesting. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, and
little subtleties. if you're looking, huh?
Subtleties. You know, I was right. You know, the way they have the keynote set up, they have the front stage. You know, and then think of a room of 5,000 chairs. On the left side is this big platform, probably with like 20 huge cameras, you know, from the media and so forth. And then they have these, about halfway in the room on the left and side, right side of the room, they have these large screens where they're reprojecting what's on stage. And, you know, I was just, I guess I had one of these big screens about 15 rows in front of me. So I had a really good view to see some of the details about, you know, what was on it. And of course, you know, I'm always looking when they're flashing words up, like, okay, what's that? What's that? And kind of thinking about, and you know, so there's subtleties that are integrated into the keynote that, you know, I think you know, as this becomes public more and more, they will come to it. But anyway, going back to these particular alliances that Apple seems to have with all these companies, I saw a list somewhere. Someone posted on the list of like 20 different companies that Apple is now known to have alliances with. And there was one company that was not on that list, and it was Google.
Interesting.
Google. Yes, there were several digs against Google at the keynote, and you know, they on the official video for the keynote, did they actually show the Siri warming up the crowd?
Yes, they did.
Mm-hmm.
And that first dig at Google was in that.
Yeah, there's a Google at Android or a dig at Android there as well. So, Bill, tell me, I think that there's definitely a vibe that Apple under Tim Cook is now the kinder and gentler Apple, and they seem to, you know, he really went out of his way to embrace developers and really went out of his way to talk about the importance of the WWDC from a development standpoint, not necessarily just this big media press rollout event. So is there a feeling that Apple really wants to recommit to its development community?
Well, yeah, I don't know if Apple was ever going away from their development community because it's a huge source of revenue for Apple. You know, one that 5 years ago, I don't think Apple even really predicted it was going to be such the success that it is. You know, I think every year, you know, WWDC is sort of the annual pilgrimage for developers, and so of course there's going to be like, you know, re-energizing developers and the development community in it, and that's part of the reason why developers go. And it's fun to learn, it's fun to connect to the people that you see only on Twitter throughout the rest of the year, and I think Apple has always had a very strong commitment to its development community. I mean, they're constantly improving and upgrading the tools, which, by the way, Apple essentially gives away for free to the development community. Whereas, you know, if I want to develop for Microsoft, you know, the Microsoft tools are relatively expensive, particularly for an indie developer. You know, they can, you know, although they do have this Express Edition, but ultimately, if you want to sell and ship applications, you're going to have to sink, you know, $1,000 or more just to get the latest tools that you need to develop on Microsoft platform. You know, with Apple, you pay the $99 to be able to distribute on the App Store, and you don't even have to pay anything for the tools. You don't even have to pay that $99 to get at the tools. And Apple's constantly improving the tools, and that's one of the things that we learned about in sessions, you know, the changes that they make to improve the lives of developers. Now, going back to the Tim Cook comment, I think you saw a real authentic side of Tim Cook at the keynote this year, where he's truly emotional and passionate about development and ultimately how apps can change and or improve the lives of users. And that video that they showed about, you know, the disabled users, like the blind guy in Europe who's able to walk through a forest,
right?
Or the autistic child. I think these are parts of Tim Cook's mission in terms of what he wants to do. I think he's showing that he's able to carry the torch of Steve Jobs and move Apple forward, move it in ways, you know, with the ultimate end goal of improving people's lives. And, you know, there were a couple times where Tim Cook actually got choked up in the keynote. One was, you know, right after that video. And then that was when he was closing remarks to developers, where I think he was at a loss for words. But it's important to him. He feels like this is how he can help change the world and make it a better place. And I think that's near and dear to his heart. He's supposedly a real personable guy. I mean, he actually is known to like eat in the Apple's company cafeteria and just sit down with random employees there and just chat with them. So he's much, he tries to connect much more to his own employees at Apple, and I think to the Apple developers, although I didn't see him after the keynote. But incidentally, going back to that video, there is a Minnesota connection. I don't know if anyone highlighted. They flashed a Mayo, an app from the Mayo Clinic up on the screen. And I presume that was done by DoApp. DoApp seems to do a lot of Mayo Clinic apps. I don't know if they still are. But, you know, it's kind of neat to see a Minnesota connection there, of course.
Yeah.
So was there anything that came out of the conference that really kind of took you by surprise? I know that the pre-events to these, a lot of the stuff came out. And I guess the only thing that was somewhat surprising is the new MacBook Pro. But did anything else from your perspective as an iOS developer kind of take you by surprise? That you can talk about?
Well, there's a new type of user interface that Apple has created that will be made available for developers that will actually, once it starts to be used, it'll change the way that a lot of apps look and feel and make them much less form in terms of just having a list of things in menus. You know, you're going to see a lot more three-dimensional type stuff within the user interface, a lot more interactivity, you know, very visual. The general app style will probably be changing, you know, starting with iOS 6. And from the end user's perspective, you probably won't, you'll start seeing applications like this, when it finally comes out this fall, but, or at least we think it's this fall. No one knows for sure except Apple, the apps are going to be much more visual, much more, much cooler. And it's just because Apple's putting this plumbing into iOS that makes it easier to do certain things to make the apps really potentially cooler in terms of the overall user experience.
Well, listen, there's some great stuff that came out of WWDC, but we really appreciate your perspective on from the developer standpoint, Bill. Listen, we're going to let you go, and you probably are. What are you up so early for? Do you have some more sessions today?
There's another half day of sessions. They go till noon. There's three sessions. I'm going to two of them, and then I have to catch the BART subway back to the airport and fly back to Minneapolis. I'd probably get in around 8 something tonight. But
well, I so much appreciate you getting up early to chat with us. It really means a lot to us, and continued success and keep tearing it up.
Yeah, thank you. I never left Central Time, so. So it was easier to get up this early.
Gutsy call, my friend. Gutsy call. All right.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure to be on this podcast.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon, man. Take care. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill.
Take care.
Wonderful. You know, it is kind of interesting to find out that, you know, we always see that front facing piece, that piece about the keynote and all the announcements and the possible one more things that come out of WWDC. So it's always good to know that, hey, there's actual work going on down there. So,
right.
And boy, it's just, hearing that story about, Code Morphic and going back in the day of that dial app that he had. I clearly remember that. So it's just
come a long way in 4 years.
He's come a very long way. No kidding. And that's the thing, we're talking about these things and then Tim, you chime in with, and 4 years later, it's only been 4 years, for God's sake.
Yeah. Well, it really is amazing when you think about how far things have come. I mean, Phil, you and I talked about having a Trio 750.
Yeah.
Or our various Trio models and how we could sort of visualize what could happen, but it certainly wasn't happening with that device.
Of course, I held onto my Trio right up till 2 years ago. So.
No, I know, but it was a great little phone. It worked great, and you know what do you need, right?
I think I'm going to go back. What do you think? I think I should go back to it.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
It was a simpler time.
I still have a 650 here that works.
You do?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Trio 650. Yeah. It's huge. You look at it in comparison with current smartphones, and the thing is just enormous.
Yep. But that was the.
And it has a, remember it had the little nub for the antenna?
Yep. Yep. I used
those were the days. Just
basically to chip ice off my windshield, but is that wrong? Should I not have done that?
Yeah, I probably didn't help it.
Oh, probably not.
But one of the things that didn't come up on the WWDC talk is that it didn't seem like there was a lot of huge announcements. I think the MacBook Pro was the only thing that was sort of, you know,
enormous.
It sort of was a little bit previewed, but it was still was somewhat surprising. But everything else is pretty much by the numbers.
Yeah, we knew that was coming. That's for sure. But, you know, but it's tough for, you know, Apple has set that bar really high to come up with really great announcements. I think we've had this discussion before, you know, at some point you do have to operate. And these are not necessarily huge leaps. You know, they're not announcing yet another segment of tech that they're pioneering. So,
that's why I made the joke at the beginning about the fact that, you know, they didn't introduce warp drive in a holodeck. I mean, some of these rumors are just unbelievable. And you think, come on, guys. I mean, jeez.
Well, I do find it interesting that yet another Apple event has gone by and yet nothing about TV.
No TVs.
Yeah.
None. I know. I know.
Maybe they won't do it.
As prognosticators, we're talking out of our asses here. But, you know, so far there has been really nothing other than the release of the $99 Apple TV. Yeah. You know, and that's it.
Well, the next logical progression would be to open up that platform for developers. So I fully expected that and it didn't happen. So
yeah. I expected
maybe it will
too.
later in the year. Because I think that will really jumpstart that platform as something that is a lot more viable than it is right now.
You suppose Tim Cook walked into the office after Steve retired and said to himself, "Holy crap! There's a lot of stuff going on here."
Yeah. I'm sure he knew about most of it.
Try and get his head around all of it. It's you know, trying to move that many initiatives forward is very difficult because you know once you establish a new segment, a tablet or a smartphone, well, you got to keep developing for it. And then you got to try to figure out what the next thing is. It's a daunting task for any company.
Well, that's the innovation paradox, right?
Mm-hmm.
It makes it really tough.
Well, but you know, now that they've got the smartphone out and the tablets out and, you know, they're continuing to innovate with laptops, you know, kind of what's next for them. And I think it's to go more into the entertainment space, even more than they have now. And that could only mean a television.
I don't know. They just do, the ability to navigate the entertainment space in a world of such incredible, I don't know, cloudiness on IP and copyright. Man, I don't know. You'd have to wonder, is it really worth the effort? They control a lot of their own IP now, and they litigate anything that they feel is a violation. I think their lawyers would be busy all the time when they got into the entertainment space.
Well, I like, though, that people talk about Apple launching into it with the Apple TV and not making a TV, not making the display.
What if they made the Apple TV more like an Xbox? So it would be, you know, have the Siri built in, have a camera so you could do FaceTime, be open for development so that developers could develop games for it. You know, you could use your iPhone or iPad as a controller. I mean, there's a lot of things they could do with Apple TV short of building it into a television set.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, they seem to be focusing on the dashboard right now. That's their next step for Siri and mobile. So, Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? You know, we'll continue to be, you know, I always look at myself on days like, you know, the WWDC event or whatever, and I, you know, setting up all of my, you know, following multiple streams and watching the live blogging and trying to see video. And it's just, I'm constantly saying, it's like, geez, Phil, you are a geek. Good Lord.
Yeah, but you know what? Contrast that to the people that I deal with every single day that can't download a PDF or a zip file. Oh, it doesn't work. So I much prefer your geekiness, Phil.
Well, there was a lot of, speaking of WWDC coverage, there was a lot of video this time around.
Yeah. There was a bootleg stream.
Right.
Yeah.
There were a couple of them. It was just amazing to me, and they lasted a long time. And
they're doubling down on secrecy, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, you know, even I watched a little bit of the Twit TV broadcast, and until it got to be too boring.
Boy, no kidding, it's boring, dude. I hopped on that too because you said you do it. It was like I hop. Oh.
I know. Well, and then it was, you know, they were watching the same live stream.
So. I know. It's like listening to Leo Laporte read his email. Do I really?
Yeah. Unbelievable. All right. Well, let's wrap up here, boys. I know Graham had to drop off.
No, wait a minute. I want to know how soon until you get the new MacBook Pro.
Well, you know what? I don't need it. Frankly, does that even matter, though?
You don't even need to upgrade your phone every time a new one comes out. Oh, it's not a need thing, Steve.
I know, but you know what? It'll come out in October, and that'll be about the time the iPhone 5 comes out. And I really need a new desktop machine. I've got a Mac Pro. I was hoping for better Mac Pro announcements.
It looks like that's coming next year.
Right. I don't know if I can wait another year.
Really? Why do you need a Mac Pro?
Yeah, why do you need a Pro? Wouldn't this MacBook Pro work?
Well, no, it would not because I do screencasting, I do publishing, photo work, and video work. Mm-hmm. And so those three, you know, yeah, I could probably do it. It would just tax the heck out of a laptop. Plus, I've got 3 terabytes of storage in this Mac Pro. So.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Jeez.
So
that's a lot of storage, my friend.
Well, and unfortunately it's almost full. So I keep everything. But anyway.
All right.
So upcoming events.
Wait another year.
Yeah. WordPress MSP and there's a couple of new things on here. The Skillshare Fair down at Coco, Minneapolis.
Oh, that should be kind of interesting.
On June 23rd, yep.
Yeah.
And then data venue. New directions for personal data at the Carlson School. This is going to be interesting with Doc Searles. If you guys remember listening to Doc Searles' keynote at the Mini WebCon, I've followed Doc since probably 2002, 2003. He writes for the Linux Journal, and now he's doing something at the Berkman Center at Harvard.
Oh, okay.
On vendor relationship management and new things. So.
Yeah, there's no site for this yet. I know.
Okay.
I know that Graham put it on. There's no site for this yet. It's Graham giving us the scoop.
Yep.
So, all right.
All right.
Good deal. Busy week ahead. So everybody have a great week, and we'll see you next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast.
See ya.
Take care.